Happy Mother's Day.
This is a March 19th work session on clean water program funding.
Cleaned up.
Long time of year, my friend.
I was tempted.
Anything my full-time employment will do for you.
Seriously, dude. When it's like, oh, I'm looking for a job. I better shave.
I better clean up.
Yeah. Seriously. Which the stupid part was, is then I had like a city council, Darren Wirtz, who has a beard. He's like, what'd you shave your beard for? I'm like, oh, great. That's good. Could have kept it. Oh, well. Oh, we got two of these, huh? One.
All right. We get on schedule here. I think we have a lot of stuff to cover. So, who's leading off?
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you. Let me just make sure.
Quack.
I have a BlackBerry.
Who just blamed Commissioner?
Okay. What my staff has prepared for you this morning, gentlemen, is a fast-paced presentation on the need for additional funding to manage our stormwater utility and remain in compliance with the Clean Water Act, and to present to you several possible options on where that funding may be obtained. None of the options we're presenting here today are or should be considered recommendations from our department. They are, however, and we feel it is our duty, however, to present to you as many options as possible for you as the policymakers to consider. We are here to answer your questions about those options and proceed on your direction and your feedback. So we'll start this morning with a little bit of background, and then I will discuss the four issues that are before us here today. We'll have a chance to go back, and so if you, each of the slides has been numbered. So if you have, really want to drill down into one of them, if you just jot the number down on a piece of paper, and we can come back to that. But I'd like to, because your questions may be answered in the next slide, is the reason for that. And we can always come back to it if you want more detail on that particular slide. The clean water fee was implemented in 2000, and the fee is based on the relative contribution to increased surface and stormwater runoff, either by buildings or impervious surfaces. The annual fee that was established is based on an equivalent residential unit. That fee was established at $33 in 2000. An ERU, equivalent residential unit, is defined as 3,500 square feet of impervious surface. We apply that by square footage to commercial accounts or non-residential accounts, as we refer to them. But for all of the residential, the board decided at the time the fee was implemented to implement one ERU per residential unit. So all of the residentials are charged at $33. You'll see there's a little variance to that as you get into the rural areas. We'll talk about that as we approach that slide. The annual revenue generated this year from this fee approximates about $5.2 million. The county policy adopted by the previous board in 2009 implemented an innovative approach to permit compliance that ultimately was not approved by regulators. The Clean Water Fund balance was used to implement this policy along with other portions to comply with the permit. The budget adopted in December of 2012 for the 13-15 biennium really exhausted the fund balance. It authorized spending that exceeded revenue, and you see that in one of the charts that I've handed out there that's separate, and it goes back 6 years. You can see that over a six-year period, the department, the county, authorized expenditures that ate up about $9 million in reserve fund balance. There just wasn't enough revenue coming in to cover not only the permit compliance costs, but the additional costs in some of our innovative approaches to the permit compliance. It just wasn't there. So they spent fund balance down, and now I come in May 2013, we're still on that spending track, but there is no fund balance to take from to cover the gap. So my clean water manager, Ron, and I began throwing as many levers as we could to slow down that $9 million spending track that the department was on, because we knew there was no ending fund balance left. It had been used up over the last 6 years. And so you'll see in another slide that we were successful in reducing our expenses significantly in that seven-month period, and we're on track now, I think, to come in at a level that's much less, and you'll see in the next slide. There's four issues we want to present to you today. Two are challenges that we face, the lawsuit reality and being able to pay the settlement, and funding compliance with the new permit. There are a lot of new requirements and new costs. There are certainly more than two, but there are two what we believe to be viable solutions to some of these funding challenges. One would be new fees, essentially from polluters that have a nexus to the clean water pollution, and the other would be an increase in the existing fee. And we'll discuss each of these four issues today in detail for you. Issue number one is pretty cut and dried. The three of you are very familiar with that because you were with us all the way through the negotiations. We ended up settling what was, many people claimed, was a $40 million lawsuit for about $3.6 million. We actually settled the suit for $3 million. There was $600,000 in legal fees on top of that. We have to pay the legal fees within 60 days of the final settlement, which just was approved by the judge a few days ago. So May 7th, I believe, is our deadline for paying the legal fees. The $3 million in penalties or payouts, if you will occur over the next 6 years, so about $500,000 expense each year over the next 6 years. In addition to that, I think it's really important to remember that those weren't the only two items in the settlement. It was very clear that we also agreed in the settlement that we would comply with all the new NPDES stormwater permits. So we have to be very careful that we are in strict compliance, because the litigants can bypass the Pollution Control Hearings Board and go straight to Superior Court based on our settlement if there's any deviation from compliance with the permit. So we're very aware of that. Ron is very aware of that. All of these folks are, and we're very careful, and we want to make darn sure that we don't take any risks that are unnecessary for the county. There are three options for paying this 3.6 in terms of the fee. If you used a fee surcharge, a one-year surcharge, we refer to this as pulling the Band-Aid off quickly. A one-time surcharge of $22 would raise enough revenue to settle the lawsuit obligations. If you wanted to spread that charge over a two-year period, it would take $11 per year in addition to the base fee. And if you wanted to spread it out for a five-year period, it would require an increase of $4.50. Please remember that these numbers would be on top of anything else that we discuss in terms of funding the actual operation, current operations. Okay, so if you're looking at a fee of $40, but one-year charge, it's really $62. So just these are on top of anything else that may be presented. So we will need, certainly not today, but in the very near future, some direction from the board on whether or not you'd like to settle the lawsuit challenge with a fee surcharge only, and if so, which option, or to combine a fee surcharge with some other form of litter, road use, some other form of pollution fees, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But those are really our options on this particular challenge. Are there any questions about that part of it before we go into the actual operational cost of the...
I do. Yes. Couple. Let me back up a little bit. When the budget was... When we were spending $9 million a year and you were bringing in about five, where did that money come from?
In the early years of the program, as the program was ramping up, it built up a fund balance. And at one point, I think the fund balance exceeded $10 million.
That was the clean water reserve fund.
That was fees that were being collected on an annual basis from the $33 that were not being spent for actual operational costs as the program was beginning.
One more question.
So like a savings account. It built up in a savings account.
Now we have more mandates than what we had at the beginning, so there's no reserve, no money to go to reserve, even though you've cut 30% from your budget so far.
About 28, you'll see in a slide here earlier, but that's correct. And the reason for that is multiple. Inflation costs, the fee has not been raised since 2000. Permit requirements, they've increased every 5 years. There is more and more to do. And the fact that the balance or the savings account was spent on things that were in excess of permit requirement. They're good things. They're enhanced our environment. They did wonderful things for our community, but they weren't required under the permit. And then in addition to that, the innovative solutions that were proposed to change the permit compliance that ultimately we did not get regulation or regulators did not approve or the courts did not approve, and there was additional cost spent on what's referred to as flow control alternatives. And so all of the savings account was spent up. And
Don, one other factor too is you have many more facilities to maintain now than previously.
At that point, our facilities have gone, I think, from originally 80 to over almost 200. Is that right? 189 or something like that that we've taken on?
Our public facility inventory is over 900 facilities.
But the ones that we've taken on from stormwater or without any development fees.
Yeah. Those are the ones that the county built as well as ones that were done in residential subdivisions and given to the county.
And then turned over to us. Over 900 of those that we're required to maintain.
And one more question. You broke that down 1, 2, and 5 years, but yet we have to do improvements for 6. What would it look like in 6 years?
It would lower it a little bit more, down to, I think, $3.75 or $4. None of those options are set in stone. We just wanted to give you some pattern of different options on that. Yes.
Sure, and I assume the case that you're making here that says here is the need and here is the, I assume that when we get to the point where we're evaluating how do we handle the financial method of paying for this, that our finance team will have a voice in this and they'll be recommending their preference and how we responsibly cover those needs in a timely fashion so that we keep our good credit rating and don't end up having, in the long run, costing us more because we got some debt service or something involved.
Yeah, and the tough part is that, I mean, the finance team is not going to suggest to you which policy option you should choose for whether, you know, which band-aid you want to pull off, because they all hurt. So, you know, and I doubt the finance team's going to want to get into telling you which policy option to choose, but hold on. I had a question, actually. So the question I had was, you have it back to 2008, and we had the 2009 settlement, right? You know, the creative alternative that failed.
2009 was right. was when the board decided not to comply with the permit.
Right.
So
2008 you have here, and there was already a $1.6 million gap between revenues and expenses. So what was causing the revenue and expense gap prior to that agreement? Because those, I mean, it seems like those are the kinds of things, you know, take out that middle area where we were kind of overspending to meet requirements for a potential solution that didn't work. We're still left with that pre-settlement gap that you're talking about.
Remember, there was a list of four or five that caused this. One of them was inflation effects, right? Ramping up, program growing, facilities growing from, you know, a couple hundred to 900. So, you know, growth of responsibility
that
primarily.
That wasn't
drove
these
that,
this year.
Yeah. If you remember, Commissioner, we got we were issued a new permit in 2007, a new municipal stormwater permit, and those requirements started hitting immediately and then ramping up in 2008. So we had to start drawing from the fund balance to meet the new permit requirements in 2008.
We were meeting like 98% of the permit, the new at that time. Now we have new. But so it was a lot of those, and then inflation ramped. Got it. Okay. So that if you take out the big chunk in the middle, is, you know, as far as kind of that excess that was spent, we're back to where we were. It's just with new requirements, even more new requirements. Super.
More and more every time there's a permit issued.
Doesn't seem to go backwards, does it? No.
Called unfunded mandates, but unfunded or not, they're still mandates. So as we learned.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So the second issue, yes, Commissioner.
Yeah, just to wrap up the role of the finance team, it really has to do with us getting input from them, informing us so that we know the cost of terms, the cost of the method going forward. And certainly that's going to be a very important part of our fulfilling our financial responsibility. We need to know what those costs are, what those trade-offs are.
Absolutely.
Guess I'm trying to figure out, are you talking about the potential, what would they give you advice on? Because a fee increase is a fee increase. There's no borrowing with a fee increase or with a surcharge or anything like this. So what would the finance team help with?
Well, we have various options in front of us. The reason that we have more than one option is because there are trade-offs, and they would be, that's a financial, those are financial trade-offs, at least.
You were talking about debt service and things, and I don't think any of the proposals were to borrow, were they? Or are they? I didn't see any.
No, we're borrowing right.
That's what I just want to make
sure. We're borrowing right now.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to make sure of that. Cool. Okay.
It has to do with whatever the cost of terms is. That's why we have a financial team to be able to.
All right, well, let's get through the presentation and see if that's even applicable.
No. Anyway, all right. Yeah, we're going to borrow.
Issue number two, and that is what level of funding does the department need to finance assured compliance? Continued high compliance costs, new monitoring. Now, this new permit adds even more, significantly increases our monitoring and watershed planning requirements, significantly. And we're going to have to comply with those. We've tried different approaches, but the bottom line is we're going to have to comply with those. We've settled in on what I believe is an accurate, clear figure to operate in compliance of approximately $6.8 million. That would be comprised of $1.7 million in capital improvements, about $1.5 million in facility maintenance, and approximately $3.5 million in program operations. Go ahead and go to the next slide.
Need that much more?
No. Total operating costs.
Oh, okay. $6.1 million.
I was going to say, that's like not doubling our fees there. Okay.
Total operating costs of the department, and we believe that will allow us to comply. Now, understand, we could maybe spend less, but when you spend less, your risk of noncompliance grows. And I don't think we want to do that. I would not recommend that to the board. I want to be sure that we're in compliance in a comfortable fashion rather than being very close and always being nip and tuck and worrying about somebody, you know, trying to sue us. So I think at 6.8, it's a very acceptable figure, and we can comply with all of our requirements and do the job that the citizens and the Department of Ecology expect us to do. And this is how it would break out. The $6.8 million would break out. You know, we've rounded it up, 6.775, in terms of staffing, supplies, and services. Next slide. And so for 2013, you know, many say, well, can't you cut? You know, can't you cut expenses? And the answer to that question is we have. Our 2013 budget approved was $9 million. At December 30th this year, we came in at 6.5. So we only spent 72% of our budgeted amount for 2013 because we knew there was no more fund balance to draw on to pay for the difference.
Good work.
And we were able to do that. I'm quite proud of Ron Waringa, our clean water manager, who's done a great job on this. We were able to do it. We weren't sure we were going to be able to do it, but we ended up being able to do it without layoffs. We didn't have to lay anybody off. We did it through efficiencies. We also stopped doing some things that were not required by the permit. And we've actually reduced some expenses on... We were very heavy in our facilities, our capital, over and above what was necessary for the permit, but we felt it was necessary for our program. But we've scaled back now, and we're doing what's required at the permit level. And so that's what has allowed this. It wasn't all efficiencies. So
the amount that you show here now, that's for our clean water program to continue on and be in compliance, does not include the other requirement of the $500,000 a year.
Right. This issue number two we're discussing now does not include the lawsuit. That's separate. If you go to the next slide, you'll see exactly where we're at in terms of our shortfall for operating costs. Okay.
That 72% ends up 28% reduction in expenditures while we're complying. That's really quite impressive. The question is, and going forward, we're talking about a shortfall in revenue. The question is there anything else in the works, such as maximizing more volunteer programs, having more adoption programs where other entities and other groups could somehow steward some of those tasks that are currently requiring DES staff time to do? Is there anything else in the works, or have you pretty much done everything that you know how in order to comply in a smart way as possible to save the expenses?
I'll take a shot at that, and then I'll ask Ron to chime in if he feels like it. But we're down to a point where the testing and the things that are required under the permit need to be done by professionals, by scientists. Otherwise, DOE is not going to accept it as being done properly. There's work that volunteers can do, and we do utilize volunteers, and we utilize schools, and school kids even help us with some things. But the fact of the matter is, most all of the pertinent scientific work that is required to be submitted in terms of certified reports to the department is required to be done by professionals that have professional expertise, people like Ron and Rod and the folks that work for him. Who do an excellent job of that. They're just not things that a volunteer, I suppose, could do, but would be accepted, I think, by the regulator. The things that can be done by volunteers, we certainly utilize volunteers for different things, mostly in our outreach and education aspect of complying with the permit is where we utilize a lot of volunteers. Ron, did you want to add to that?
Well, just to be brief, because we've got a lot to cover. Commissioner, we're always looking to do things the most cost-effective way that we possibly can. So, I mean, individual projects moving forward. You know, Don has communicated to our department that partnerships are our key goal this year. We're looking for those opportunities. Any efficiencies we can get, any cost savings with the services that we get. We work with Heath and his staff continually to make sure that the services Public Works provides are cost effective. Regardless, it would be a small number if we can reduce costs, but we're always looking to do that. The amount in talking about the revenue side of things, we really feel that it's important to make sure we have this revenue coming in regardless of the budget that the board authorizes, regardless of savings that we find in the future. It's important to at least have this on hand is what we're communicating.
Already demonstrated that with a 28% cost reduction and still complying with more requirements, that the department is very capable of and has demonstrated that you've done that.
I think it's key for us as a board to know that they can't keep cutting 28%. That they
Bingo.
28%
right.
Cut, the big portion of it was the excess that was being done.
Alternative
proposal that's no longer. So, again, you go back to the spending levels that existed before that alternative. We're still imbalanced. And so there's just, I mean, you guys have done great in cutting what you can. I am concerned about the facilities and ongoing increases in number of facilities. If we're cutting facilities costs, I don't know how much more you could possibly cut that, because you get one failure of a facility, then, I mean, we're in trouble.
This $6.8 million budget does not anticipate a large reserve fund, which I know the finance team is raised and is concerned about, as am I. Okay, that's an issue that has come up in our finance team meetings when we've discussed this. And again, it doesn't mean that the board has to approve that kind of expense. If we are able to save some money in 1 year that we could use, you know, and we can put a little away, if we have a catastrophic failure in a bad storm like we did several years ago up in Mount Vista, we're in trouble. We're going to have to borrow to fix it. So that's our situation. You bet. All right. So let's talk about the last two issues, which are the potential fixes, or at least several of the options. I asked our, we had about 14 managers together in a meeting. I asked in a brainstorming session, I said, if you were the Clean Water Czar for a day and you could pass any fee on anybody you wanted, who do you think impacts our system the most? And we just brainstormed it, and we ended up writing, I think, 15, 16, 17 items on the whiteboard. Once that was all done, we then created a committee of six folks from different divisions, and they were charged with looking at all of these options that everyone had put out on the board to see what was viable, how much it generated. If it generated less than $100,000, we called it low revenue. If it generated more than $100,000, we called it high revenue. Okay, and we took, could the county do it? Would it require state law? And really, was the nexus clear? The criteria that we used was, how hard is it to collect? How hard is it to verify if you're charging, you know, the numbers? Is it relatively simple to bill? Does it generate enough money to bother with, right? All of the, and is the nexus there between our facilities and cleaning our facilities and so on? And what we came up with, and the committee came up with, is the list that you have in front of you. And as we went through, and the committee worked through each of these, and I have members of the committee here, and Pete Dubois from our Solid Waste Division is here, and he chaired this committee and went through it. I did not attend all of the meetings. I monitored what they came up with, and this is what they came up with. As you can see...
The ones circled are the ones directly related.
The ones circled
related.
Are the ones that are the most viable in terms of dollar amounts available and the ability of the county to actually implement. And you can see several of them have legal constraints or require changes in state law or generate minimal revenue. I mean, for a variety of reasons, they just weren't. I mean, some of these you could still do, certainly, but we really wanted to give you what we thought and what the committee believed were the four or five most viable options, and we'll drill down into those four here unless you have questions about any of the others.
I'm just generally trying to wrap my head around. So are these all, so this isn't a change to the actual fee collection system. This would be additional kind of a surcharge, but not an across-the-board surcharge, or would this actually change the fee collection system?
This has nothing to do with the current clean water fee that's applied. That's in section number four of the presentation.
I'm with you.
This would be new stuff.
Got it.
Okay. All right. If the board chose to go that route. And so if you take a look at the four most viable in terms of revenue and ability of the county to do it, the first one I think is private roads. Next slide.
I'm curious, you got on there obligated funds for some of those that kind of make it unattractive. What does that mean?
What that means is if we were to charge for that, it would likely be required to go into the solid waste fund and not the clean water fund.
Oh, wrong thing.
Yeah. You could do it, but it would go into the solid waste fund, right, because of the nexus. So the first one is private roads. There's approximately 200 private roads in Clark County that are not paying a clean water fee now. Most all of these are owned either by an individual parcel owner that has a long private road or a homeowners association. The potential revenue from this, if we were to capture all of those, would be about $120,000 a year. And I just want to throw this disclaimer out. All the revenue projections that we have here are based on estimates. And if you give us direction, we will drill down and get, you know, much closer. But these are based on the estimates at the time that the work was done. You'd have to change the county code in order to do this. We believe it would be difficult to assess. Right now, the clean water fee goes on the parcel and the tax form. There's really no tax a bill that goes out to homeowners associations. We would have to develop and maintain a billing system for HOAs. It could be done, but it's a little more difficult than some of the other options. Just be aware of that.
I talk about the wrong fund for a minute. Is it the solid waste funds? I assume that it's not a option that you could transfer from one fund to another. Solid waste cannot fund clean water. Right?
They're called enterprise funds, Commissioner, and you have to use the money in the enterprise fund for the intended use. In terms of solid waste, if it's in our solid waste management manual that you will soon be asked to adopt the new 5-year update in a couple of months to that, then yes, you can use the money for it. If it's not in the solid waste manual, no, you can't use the money for it.
And if you look at that option, is that simply not on the list because it's really not available?
Well, there are some functions in the solid waste plan that are required for solid waste that we can get credit for under the clean water permit. Those functions are legitimate functions of solid waste and are done for solid waste. We have the added advantage of being able to say, oh, guess what? That also allows us to tick off this to-do box for this permit. And we're doing that now, and part of this expense reduction was a shift in some of those responsibilities. So we are doing that.
Already doing that.
Yes. But the fee generated from that particular item would have to go into the solid waste fund. And yes, of course, we could use some of that money for some of those things, but it's pretty limited. And we spent a lot of time consulting with the PA's office on whether or not we can use the money for that or not.
In other words, so, you've already evaluated that and it didn't make the list.
Yeah, and Commissioner, our recommended program budget already includes those leveraging opportunities.
Okay.
So I one of the items you had on there was the private road thing. I'm concerned with we have recently added more requirements of them on bridges and culverts that they're faced with right now. So,
private roads?
Yeah.
Okay. Just as an example, here is a subdivision, and you can see the circle road around the subdivision. That, Ron, do you remember exactly? That's what, 1.2 miles or something? I can't remember the exact amount.
It's about 1.4 acres of impervious area.
And nobody's paying for that. And that's paved. It's causing runoff. But each of those houses are paying the $33, maybe less if they're on more than a half an acre of land. But no one is capturing the cost of the impervious area in this private road. That's just one example. There are several. Next slide.
When you say causing runoff, is it causing runoff so in a way that the DES has to directly service that runoff from that road?
In some cases, Commissioner, yes. In some cases, the discharge is directly to the county system. In others, they may have their own private facility that they're maintaining, and it may discharge directly to a surface water body, but it's sometimes is the answer.
I would assume that if they're covering their own runoff or their own neighborhood or private facility, that we wouldn't charge them because they're already doing the job themselves directly.
Well, we would. We use impervious area as a way to assess our fee. So our current structure is set up so that regardless of whether or not there's a residential subdivision or a commercial area maintaining their stormwater facility, everybody pays based on their impervious area. It's our way to assess the fee. It's unrelated to their, it's related to their impact. It's an approximate impact, but it's unrelated to actual management of runoff.
I'm just trying to think like one of those homeowners thinking, what are you charging us for? We're taking care of our own water. Okay.
Because that's kind of where I would come from too, because their stormwater facility is something that we bought off on to handle any stormwater that would come off that road and the residents there when it's required and built. Along that line, those private systems that are out there, we've had a couple serious failures. So they have a development fee that they pay if the facility becomes owned by the county.
And Commissioner, that is our third option here. We're going to talk about that.
Yeah. So if we were to take over those, and they were in working condition, they didn't pay that development fee. So they didn't have to pay the development fee. The HOA would. Is that kind of the idea?
No. This really is roads. We'll get into the actual stormwater facilities and the development charges, which is what you're referring to, I think is slide number 3 or 4 here. It's one of the four options that we had. The second one, and which came up a lot in the brainstorming session, was stuff that we find in our dry wells, in our filtration facilities, and it's litter. A lot of times it's fast food cups. If the facility happens to be close to a school, it's plastic pen caps and spiral notebooks. So some of it has to do with where the facility is located, what kind of things you have to clean out of it. But in almost all of them, there is a lot of litter, and we took a look at how do we go after that. Is there a way to apply a fee to that, the people that are generating the litter? Pretty difficult to do on the fast food stuff because there's thousands of outlets. There's no way to monitor how many cups are going out the door, and what you'd have to set up an auditing system. It would be pretty difficult to do. Newspapers a little bit different. Pretty easy to do. There's already an audit system in place for newspapers. You know exactly how many they print every day because advertisers have access to a thing called the Audit Bureau of Circulation, and so you know how many they put out. One daily paper with a circulation of 28,000 distributes 1,250,000 pages of paper a week, every single week. And so it's a pretty significant amount of litter. The potential revenue for papers, depending, and we looked at a couple scenarios, if it was a penny a paper, if it was 2 cents a paper, 3 cents a paper, for it, whatever it is. We just settled on one example at 1.5 cents. That would generate about $150,000 a year in revenue. Not a lot, but over our $100,000 mark, so it fell into the high revenue category. So.
On the fast food side, was there any calculation of the tonnage of waste, though, that occurs from that? Because it's ridiculously large. I don't know why it wouldn't be as simple as it would be for a plastic bag fee where you just put a nickel charge on every order kind of a thing. I mean, why? Because nobody's bringing their own bag to McDonald's, right? So
we did look, by the way, the plastic bag fee was looked at as well. Okay.
Solid waste kind of thing. Yeah. On the litter side of this, did you do a tonnage analysis, or did anyone look at that, or did it get that far?
Well, I don't think we did, but I'll ask Pete to elaborate a little bit on what the committee took a look at in terms of the litter aspect of it, because that was discussed.
It was discussed, but we did not go to that test.
Yeah. They just felt there were so many outlets and that there was no standardized audit or counting system to really know how many cups go out the door or fast food containers go out the door.
There's a lot more tonnage of litter coming from fast food wrappers and cups and everything else than there is from newspapers.
I don't doubt it. Yeah.
Because you can recycle newspaper, you can't recycle anything that comes from McDonald's, except for the food, and that gets recycled quickly. Some of it sticks.
So
that's a different division.
With the other hat that you wear, I seem to recall that there's a state fee on fast foods already.
Is there?
The Department of Ecology, there may well be. I can't recall, Commissioner.
Something to look into.
Yeah, I'd be curious. It's a good question.
I wouldn't want to charge them twice.
No, exactly.
And then,
I know there used to be a state fee on newspapers, and that was removed several years ago. They don't pay. Newspapers don't pay.
And when you were talking about the newspapers, you talked about it per page. Or are you talking about per newspaper?
Right. This would be per paper, not per page.
And how would you do that for all of the, would you just charge them based on their overall circulation? Because, like, for example, the Reflector, the vast majority of them are unpaid subscriptions. So how would you charge for those newspapers?
Number printed.
It doesn't matter what paper it is. All papers have a verification of circulation system that they're required to have for their advertisers. Sears or Target are not going to buy ads or put flyers in, those flyers you get, unless you can verify to them how many households you're reaching. So there is a system in place that the county would not have to pay for or create or build like we would if we build a homeowners association, that we already know it's verified. This is how many you print every day or how every week or if it's once a month, maybe, you know, depending on what the publication is.
So would that include like the nickel ad? The nickel ad newspaper?
I guess yeah. Sure, you know, Auto Trader, nickel ad. You know, they used, for this estimate, it was used, they used a 50,000 cutoff. You know, if you don't publish more than 50,000 papers over the course of a 7-day period, then you wouldn't be caught up in this. But that would be a policy decision that the board could make. It might be 20,000, it might be 50,000, it might be everybody, period. But I don't want to dwell on this because we've got a lot more to go on. It's just one of the options.
The scope of this, whatever extra revenue, are we talking about all of Clark County, countywide, regardless of jurisdictions, of cities?
Correct. For this revenue. Now, when it comes to road charges, no. The city Battleground has their own permit. They do their own clean water fee. Vancouver has their own permit. They do their own clean water fee.
So when these calculations were estimated, that was already figured in. What is going to be the actual scope? Some are going to be countywide. County. Some are going to be unincorporated area-wide. Okay.
The next one. Is this the next one, or did we go ahead one? Is this number three? Okay, number three. Here we go. System development charges. This is what Commissioner Mielke was referring to earlier. Right now what happens is when a developer builds a housing development, 5 houses, 3,500 houses, what happens is they have an option. They can turn the stormwater facilities that we require them to build in order to get the development permits over to us when it's over, or they can turn it over to be maintained and operated by a homeowners association. Those are essentially the two options. We have accepted about how many, Ron, over the last
five years? Our public facility inventory, as it says up there, has increased. It increases at about, we've been mapping it at about 40 facilities a year.
That's right.
You know, we build some of those in parks and roads and things like that. The rest of them are dedicated to the county through residential development.
Now, when these developers build out the sewer system and they turn it over, they pay a system development fee to the sewer company. Same thing with electrical. Same thing with the stormwater aspect of it is the only one where I'm aware where the utility, in this case us, because we are the utility for stormwater, takes on the facility with no system development charge for doing so. Okay. That's different than sewer. Sewer, they pay. Well, sewer pays too. They pay a maintenance fee every month for their sewer, right? Even though the developer built the sewer originally and the new person in there is still paying, there was a development fee, and that is to allow for long-term maintenance. That's the purpose of system development charges. We don't utilize those in Clark County. It is one of the options. If the board decided to try to build out, you know, a 30-year fund to take care of these facilities when they ultimately fail, and they all will or do, this is an option. And we think that depending on 40 or 50 a year, based on a approximate charge of about 50 grand, it would generate about $250,000. But, and you'll see in my recap chart, it's hard to really calculate that as being able to be used for operational costs, because you really, the purpose of it is to use it for maintenance and refurbishment of these facilities when they fail, which they ultimately all do at some point. Next slide.
Before you switch there, I'm looking at in the middle, in the policy of taking facilities into public ownership, what I'm thinking is that the county is ultimately responsible for those facilities to be in compliance. And if we don't ensure that firsthand, then we're still liable. And we're just saying, we trust that you're going to do it, or it's your obligation, and yet if that fails, or it doesn't comply, we're still liable. Is that right? So I would think that is not such a that exposes us to more liability and doesn't really give us the direct control to ensure that compliance will happen.
Just as an example, we have over 100 facilities that are owned by HOAs that are in some form of disrepair now. And we have one person in our on our staff that is dedicated to working with those homeowners associations to rehabilitate them. Some of them didn't know they owned the facility. Some of them knew they owned it, but they don't have any homeowner fees or dues or any money to repair the facility. I mean, there's a myriad of different variables out there. But the fact is we have about 100 of them that are in some form of failing right now that need to be repaired and have attention.
And we do require them to pay. I mean, all those people that are working with, if there's an HOA that says, hey, we, you know, just take it. If it's in disrepair, if it's in failure, they have to pay to get it up to code before we take it. So that is the one time they actually pay for anything, as if it's already failing, right?
Yeah, that's happened somewhat infrequently, but we have taken some from HOAs that just are not capable of taking care of it. But yeah, we make them fix it. The issue would be, you know, do we make folks pay a sort of a long-term maintenance fund based on a life cycle? But yeah, you're right. They do spend money to bring it up to code.
Regardless of who pays, the obligation of having direct control and to ensure that complies with all of our requirements, it sounds to me like that would be problematic for us to just assume that you're going to do it.
It's an additional cost, Commissioner.
Point.
Yes, it is. It is.
You're right. Bad policy to assume that they're going to comply.
We allow people to keep them privately if they want to integrate them into common areas and subdivisions and things like that. But you're absolutely right. We have the responsibility to inspect them and make sure that they comply.
And I assume we would strike that option off the list. That's not really a responsible option for us.
Essentially, in the last 10 years.
It's definitely an option. I mean, that's a policy call. There are jurisdictions who do not take facilities into public ownership. There's an additional cost because you have to inspect them and dedicate staff to work with them to make sure that they bring their facilities into compliance. It's a trade-off.
That's how they do their regulatory compliance, is they just use someone, an actual person, like we've had to do with a lot of these private, to go hammer on them to actually fix their own facilities, which is a cost for us. There's no doubt. It's a pain.
We have the same obligation, Commissioner, in commercial areas. We do not take facilities from commercial development into public ownership. They, too, need to comply with our standards, and so we have to use Heath's folks, go out and inspect them, and then we come in and work with them to bring them into compliance. So the more private there are, the more you have an operational cost to bring them up to code.
I suggest that we do strike that option off the list. There is a way that we can ensure compliance.
Yeah, there it is an option.
Okay.
Yep, we got a lot to go and try to stay on track. Our last option of the four was a road intensity surcharge. This is based on the concept that the wider the road, the more lanes, obviously the more traffic flow, which increases the two things that we're responsible for. It increases the flow or the runoff, but it also increases the dirtiness, if you will, of the water. Water that runs off of a road is dirtier than water that runs off of a house. Water that runs off of a road that has 100,000 cars a day is dirtier than water that runs off of a road that has 10 cars a day. So if you've got a 72-foot wide roadway, you've got a pretty high intensity use, a lot of cars, a lot of oil dripping, a lot of runoff. We could create a surcharge for those larger arterials that have heavy traffic that are dumping more water and dirtier water into our system. And we labeled that a road intensity surcharge, kind of like a hot lane pass for congestion pricing on traffic, but this is where, you know, a lot of the runoff occurs. But understand, if we went for this option, most of the pain would be paid by the county because we own the roads. yeah, exactly. So this is, you know, this option would hit Department of Transportation and the County Road Fund.
Well, I see the note there that says state fee is determined under state law. If we end up using this method, does that, we don't, I assume we don't need a law change to do that. We can just say we've got a rate that applies. We still have control of the rate.
Right. We control the rate. State law requires that the county charge the Department of Transportation 30% of the rate it charges itself. And so they have a mandated 70% discount in the law.
So we, I have to ask the dumb question. We can't have a rate that's for a state rate or for an interstate rate. It has to be
RCW specifically
square footage
excludes
rate.
That option. They thought of that. You could raise the rate for everybody, and they pay a percentage of that.
You mentioned on their state. I assume you also include interstate. Does interstate?
Yeah, all state-owned.
State's responsible for the interstate system too.
Okay, so federal government's not involved here at all. Okay.
If you were to implement all four of the options that you just looked at, you would be looking at about $680,000 in revenue, give or take. But again, on the system development charge, just keep in mind that would likely, and if you did implement this, I would strongly encourage that money be set aside for actual long-term, you know, maintenance and repair of the facilities. You couldn't really use that for operational costs, because then when you had the failures, you wouldn't have the money to fix it. So, but that's, you know, that's pretty much it for this section. That's what you're looking at, somewhere between $600,000 and $700,000 in revenue if you were to apply that. Let's talk about the fourth issue, which is the actual clean water fees. That's the second option for generating revenue, and that is to increase our existing clean water fees. In order to get into that discussion, I think it's important to know that we currently have, this is our rate card, if you will. Residentials pay 33. If you're on acreage, okay, you're going to pay a little less, 29. It goes down to, if you have a 20-acre parcel, you pay 19. The theory there is you're infiltrating the runoff into your own land and you're not impacting the system. That's why those discounts were put in place originally. Any multifamily, whether it's an apartment or a condo, you're going to pay 33 times the number of units there. Number four is our, well, I refer to it as our commercial rate. The guys call it the non-residential rate because it's more than just commercial. But essentially, these are our retail, commercial, churches, hospitals, anything other than residential is based on $33 times 3,500 square feet of impervious area. And then, of course, the state RCW forces us to create essentially a fifth category, which is one-third of the cost of the fee for the road fund. Next slide. Again, just to reiterate what I mentioned earlier, and that is, if the rate had been adjusted, bless you, for inflation, the current fee would be $45. That would get you the same purchasing power. Today, that $33 buys about $24 worth of services, which is significantly less than what it bought when it was first implemented. So, there are many, many options, because there's a, you know, as you saw from the rate card, there are five different categories, so there's a lot of different options. There are
Sure. Fee adjusted for inflation, $45. Is that what we're saying is needed?
No. What we're saying there is that if you use a consumer price index and adjusted the $33 fee each year from the day it was implemented in 2000, today the fee would be $45. Okay. As I was saying, there are many options, but there are four that we think, you know, rise to the level of having the board take a look at, and so let's go into those. Certainly, an across-the-board increase, the fee for everybody goes up. It simply goes from 33 to 44. An $11 increase, that would generate the $6.8 million in operating capital needed to comply with the permit. It would continue the current discount on the large rural lots, and it would increase the road fund obligation from, what did we say it was now, currently 1.9 to about 2.4. simply because a general rate increase affects everybody, and the road fund is our largest customer. So, the urban area surcharge, we've found that 3/4 of our stormwater management costs are incurred within the urban growth boundary. There's more concrete, more impervious surfaces, clearly more runoff, and so most of our costs are there in the urban growth boundary. If you chose to increase the fee only within the urban growth boundary, which is where most of our work is conducted, that would require a fee of $47. That would be a $14 increase on the urban properties and no increase on the rural properties. In that case, the road fund obligation would actually go down because most of our county roads are in the outside the urban growth boundary. The roads inside the urban growth boundary, I mean, there's just more of them, so you can see that it would go down because it would be less of a fee to those roads.
So the obvious thing is that we can set two different rates, one for the urban growth inside and one outside.
So when you start calculating this, it looks like you might have started at the what it would have been had we added inflation at $45 and then added.
No.
No?
$33.
Because when you started off, you said, had we gone out for 5 years, it would be $4.50 per resident.
That's the surcharge. That's to cover the $3.6 million lawsuit. Okay?
This is just an ongoing deficit.
This is, the lawsuit is 3.6. Our operating cost is 6.8. So there's two different targets we're trying to hit with two different assessments, essentially.
So in all these fee scenarios, Commissioner, where that 6.8 number is the one we're trying to hit. We're looking at what rate do you need to set across your accounts to hit that one number, 6.8 million.
Are any of the jurisdictions, the small cities and towns, inside subject to this? I know Vancouver takes care of their own, so only this. So everyone takes care of their own. This is just talking about unincorporated Clark County. Okay.
But if you look at the rates, correct me if I'm wrong, we have the lowest rate in the county of all the jurisdictions. Is that correct?
Yeah. What is Richfield, George?
That's a good question. I should know things like that, shouldn't I?
You'll find
speed
out.
Quick, man.
So we were short in our budget of $1.6 million. And you want to raise 2.8. With the increases.
No.
Sure, everything goes to 6.8, and right now our receivable for 2014 is 5.2. So it's 1.6 across the board above what we anticipate collecting right now.
And then in the first 6 years, add another $500,000 on top of that.
And you have to add the legal settlement surcharge. Right.
So those other jurisdictions within the county, what methods are they using to generate their revenue? Are they just simply using the same simple method that we're doing now, so many dollars per square foot?
Yeah, it varies across the state, but in general, people use impervious area, they use units, they use a rate. Some have complicated structure. I mean, the more flexible you can make it and sort of split all your units out into individual piles, you know, the more complicated it gets. But generally, people are doing it the same way that we are.
Okay, so you looked at all the, because there are a
Absolutely.
Source of other fertile ideas of what they've done to provide their revenue, yeah. And they're basically doing what we're doing.
We've looked at stormwater utilities, cities and counties across the state, and looked at different ways that we could do this, and sort of, you know, are highlighting a few. As Don said, there are many, many ways to do it. The four that we're showing you today are just some of the ones we thought, you know, would be good.
And they're simpler and they're easier to collect. I still, you know, have for a long time believed that it would be a good idea. If you were looking at a higher rate, a lot of jurisdictions have reductions that are available.
Yep.
So that if you are, like you mentioned, that subdivision that's dealing with their own impervious, you know, surface, that they would be able to get a reduction for that, because they're saying, well, why should I pay the same as the guy that's, you know, funneling stormwater directly into a creek? Because I'm taking care of mine, so why would they pay the same? So that they'd be able to get a reduction for dealing with it on site. And a lot of jurisdictions have done that to be able to provide an incentive for them to do good things. Plus, a lot of the work in the urban areas that we do is retrofit and dealing with problems that have existed for a long time, because there was no control before. And these newer developments are paying exponentially more with for these new standards, and they're dealing with all of their stormwater on site. So they're saying, wait, so I have to pay a ton more up front, and you want me to pay the same as the person in Palaida or in Hazelville that has been shuttling, you know,
You're absolutely right, Commissioner. A lot of the development within the urban growth boundary is old development. It's been here for many, many years before there were any stormwater requirements. And so we do have a few challenges where we're dealing with situations like that. But let's move on. The clean water fee, now, I mentioned earlier, and you saw on the chart, if you live in a rural area, you're getting a discount. If you just took that discount away and said, okay, everybody's going to pay the same. And so that was one idea. Okay, have a standard fee across the board for everybody, right? So you would require a $9 fee across the board, right, if you standardize or took away the discount for the rural. By the way, and according to my notes, the rural folks down as low as 26, they would actually experience about a $16 increase. Whereas all the people that are already paying 33, because they're paying less already, right? They're paying $7 less already. But that is an option. It would standardize the fee. Large lots would no longer receive a discount. It would reduce the overall fee increase across the board, but you would be taking away the incentive that Commissioner Stewart talked about for rural properties to manage their own stormwater if you chose this option. So just... every one of these options has puts and takes, you know. Category number four, the non-residential rate. This is essentially what I refer to as the commercial rate. If you only raise the fee for those customers on which we calculate their impervious surface, that fee would go up $19 to $52. If you left the $33 fee the same for everybody the way it is, the non-residentials would have an increase of $19. That would also increase the road fund obligation because they're a non-residential customer. And so that would, you can see what the effect of that would be. Next slide. So here's an example of a combination, and there are a multitude of combinations that the board may choose in the end, but here's just one. If you increase the current fee $5 on everybody and then put a surcharge, say, on the non-residential, the commercials, of $10, that would be a $15 increase for non-residentials, a $5 increase for residentials, and that still gets you to the 6.8. So, and there's a number of different various options that you can pick and choose and put together that will affect these rates a little bit here or there. Next slide.
Living in a rural area, I keep waiting for my thank you letter for purifying the water instead of another fee added on to my residence. So
I get the impression
and I think that, you know, something we've never done, and that is to look at the polluter and reward those that don't and have the polluter pay their way. So.
That's the idea behind the high intensity surcharge, behind the litter surcharge. I mean, there's more pollution coming from those. So, absolutely. Actually, I'm amazed. It's 1 hour and we flew through 30 slides. That's pretty much our presentation. I mean, the question is not, in my mind, is the fee going to go up or not? The answer, I think, to that question is obvious. We've been mandated by the federal government, by the state government, and by a federal court judge to raise our fee. I don't think we have an option there. The issue is, and the question for the board to determine, is how much of it will go up and on who, and how much of it do you offset with fees directly to polluters that have a nexus. Those are really the issues, you know, for the commissioners to consider. There's no way we can comply with the current permit or pay the lawsuit without an increase. That's a given. And so you're between a rock and a hard place. I understand it's tough to raise fees, but the fact of the matter is we will be sued again if we do not comply with this permit, and we cannot comply having spent all of our savings up we have to have additional money to comply with the permit. That's the bottom line, gentlemen. And it's not a pretty situation, but it is a situation where I'm quite glad I'm not the policymaker.
Well, I have to thank you. We have lots and lots of information, lots of options. I think we'll probably be discussing a lot of it at board time. Any other questions of them today? I know. I'll probably have a whole lot more later.
Inevitably.
So. I think the last page in the handout, and just if you just click for a second, and I'll just take kind of a recap of the different options that are here. Again, on that one page where we had polluter fees, there are other options that certainly you can still consider, but they're much more difficult to achieve what we're trying to achieve. The four that were the easiest we've highlighted here, the four options and the fee we've highlighted here. And then remember always, no matter what you choose, you still have that lawsuit obligation. You'll see here, whatever your base rate you choose out there to the left, it says base. That's whatever you do. It's going to be plus the surcharge necessary to settle the lawsuit. So,
okay, so the table, that's very useful. I was going to look for that. So this is a menu of different potential options.
That recaps what we've just gone over for you.
But if we were to pick and choose, that the total needs annual fee increase needs to be $1.6
million. We're collecting 5.2 now. We need 6.8. We've got to have an additional $1.6 million in order to comply.
Okay. Just my own feedback here is that when federal and state authorities mandate and dictate to us, we must raise our fees. We accept that. That's the way the world is. And the only question at this point is that if we're going to fulfill our responsibilities, the question is how?
Correct.
Okay.
And there's no... And we talk about the, that if we had reserves, maybe we could not have to do this today. But it may not be today or tomorrow, but it'd be, the day after that, because we're still in a deficit position.
Take a look at that first chart, Commissioner, that I handed out. You'll see the can has been kicked down the road for the last 8 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can't kick the can down the road any longer.
Right. Any final moments? No.
Great work.
We're certainly willing to do additional research on any items that we haven't covered. If you guys have your own brainstorming session, let us know. We'll do the research and get you the details on that. And as soon as you give us feedback on this, we'll flesh these out in more detail for you in the future.
Okay.
We have not heard from anyone from the finance team, so if they have input on any of these things that we ought to consider, please make sure we get it.
I'd sure like an email from anybody on the finance team that has questions or concerns or whatever. So,
as a finance team?
Yeah, I think we are.
The question is, what kind of reserves are they going to yell at us that we have to have or something?
Whatever means you want to come up with and plan with, Mark, to...